The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN SC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley. What a busy 24 hours in the football world. Later on, we'll be talking with Del Piero and Gab about the fact that Conte has left Inter and Zinedine Zidane has left Real Madrid. We'll start, though, as we introduce Frank Leboeuf and Ali Moreno to the show to talk about the Europa League final, in which nothing happened for 120 minutes, but then penalties, brilliant, everybody scores, including the Villarreal goalkeeper. And in the end, that proved decisive because David De Gea had his penalty missed. Should have gone straight to penalties in the first place.
I must admit, there were some great penalties.
Yeah.
I have to say, there were some absolutely fantastic penalties, including the Villarreal goalkeeper. Now, the big talking point going into the game, or one of them was, you know, and this has got no bearing on his goalkeeping performance, was who was going to start? Was it Henderson or De Gea? It was De Gea, and ultimately, you got to feel sorry for a goalkeeper missing a penalty, because it's not the forte. But first, let's get out of the way. Villarreal, fantastic, right? Man United, it's not about winning the Europa League. They've seen that movie before under Mourinho in recent years. This is one of the biggest clubs in the world. It's a stepping stone if they had won it. But for Villarreal, magnificent. I was reading Sam Wallace from the Telegraph earlier. They've got a budget less than Southampton and Crystal Palace. They've got a manager who's been there, seen it and done it, in this competition in particular with Sevilla. He's done it again. And on the other side of the ring, you have a man who should not, and I've been saying it for a couple of years now, a man who should not be managing Manchester United. He's a serial loser. He's a serial loser. He's now lost a final. He's been pumped out of, what, four semi-finals at least. They were out of all the domestic competitions. They were in a good place in the Champions League group stages, and they blew that as well. His team selection was awful. Rashford didn't look right. Then he kept him on. He took Greenwood off. He's out his depth, and I've been saying that for a long, long time. If they'd won this tonight, I would still have been saying the same thing. But I think, to me, that's just absolute proof, if needed, and it's not needed for me, that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is only managing this club, Dan, because he was a former player.
Ali, if Unai Emery was in charge of Manchester United, would they have won today?
Yes, because that would have meant that he was not in charge of Villarreal. And what you saw from Villarreal today was a team that was so well organized and so clear as to what their purpose in the game was. This game, even though Manchester United had all the possession in the world, was played at the pace that Villarreal wanted it to be played at. Never did you see Villarreal under true, real pressure. Whenever they were put under pressure was because of their own turnovers trying to come out of the back. It wasn't because Manchester United were creating all sorts of chances or somebody was taking on players in 1v1 situations or the passing game of Bruno Fernandes or Paul Pogba. None of that was happening, and a lot of it had to do with how well organized Villarreal was and how well prepared they were. And when you see a team that is as well prepared as this team was, then you have to say Unai Emery plays a factor. We had this discussion yesterday. How important is it that a guy who has won this competition three times that he's managing a team? Well, he knows exactly what his team was all about, and this team in particular was very close to whatever he had at Sevilla all those years that he won. It was a similar makeup to the group, and you saw a similar performance. Villarreal outstanding in the way that they approached the game and in the way they controlled the game. Unai Emery outstanding. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, not so much.
Frank, from a United perspective, watching this game, you kind of thought they were going out as if this was the first leg. Keep it tight in the first leg. Don't do anything silly. We'll take them back to Old Trafford and we'll get the win. Because there was just no fire, no spark for a European final.
Well, it's hard to analyse and explain everything in a final. You know, you don't play a final. You don't try to play well. You just try to win a final. I played many finals in my life. And I have to say that I would say half of them were bad games, but we won it. And especially the Cup Winners' Cup final that we played against Stuttgart. But that's a mentality that you have to have. And it's true, we felt that that club, Manchester United, shouldn't be in the European League final because we all know that they deserve to be, well, they should be in the Champions League. Now, saying that, they have to confirm that being there in a, let's say, lower competition, they have to do everything to win it and show their superiority. But football is much more complicated than that. And Villarreal showed them that even if you are a strong historical club, you have to fight hard and maybe give 100% to maybe win. And it's what they didn't do. They thought maybe in some players' head that they were superior to Villarreal and didn't do what they had to do or the maximum they had to do to win it. And that's as simple as that. A final is very special. And Villarreal did everything to win it. And I saw the confidence that they had in the penalties that they took, where I felt that Manchester United were always at the edge, and especially in those penalties. And at some point, somebody will miss it. That was the conclusion of it. You know, that was the conclusion of a game that Manchester United, well, didn't do everything to win it.
No, anybody can lose a final, right? It can happen. Villarreal, seventh in La Liga, small budget, as I mentioned, experienced manager, some experienced players, but nothing compared to the budget that Man United have. But even in La Liga this season, that by even people that follow it regular, it's been a pretty average La Liga season. Mm. The teams have struggled in Europe and Atletico over the line. But the goalkeeper hardly had anything to do, the Villarreal goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was lots of possession, but they're getting nothing from the right-hand side. Wan-Bissaka is a good defender.
Shots on target.
Shots on target, good pace. Doesn't offer much going forward. Will get forward, but end product not great. Luke Shaw's had a great season, but, you know, once again, didn't get much in terms of crosses in. Fernandez was, on the missing list. Pogba, bang average. McTominay was probably their best player from the middle of the park for long periods driving forward. But people tell me, and I've heard some people say about how Man United now have an identity under Solskjaer. Tell me what it is. Somebody tell me what it is. You look at Man United, you look at Man City, you look for identity, you look at Dan Slick passing, fullbacks tucking into the midfield, high pressing. You look at Liverpool when everybody's fit, and they're in their pomp, and even an ardent Man United fan would have to say Liverpool's form this year has been down to injuries. When they're all fit, what's the identity under Klopp? It's high pressing, it's energy, it's pace, it's power. They swarm you. What's United's identity? Give it to Fernandes. Try and get Pogba in the game. Sit and defend for a little bit and hit on the counter-attack. What's their identity? Their identity is their manager. Their manager has got his head in the clouds at key moments. He hasn't got the experience. He hasn't got the resume of a Tuchel, of a Klopp, and of a Guardiola. These top managers, you know, Antonio Conte, who's left Inter Milan today, love him or loathe him, track record.
Yeah.
Hasn't got a track record. His track record was a United player. And yet somehow that has washed and bought over some of these analysts who won't admit it, but are buying him a bit of time because they either played with him or they know him. This is Man United. This is a side that are getting their backside whopped by Liverpool and Man City. This is a side that can't even win the Europa League now. This is a side that are not dining at the big table in European football, and yet they continue to say, we're going in the right direction. We have the right man in charge. Who really believes that? Who really, really believes they have the right man in charge? When it comes to the crunch and all the big games that Solskjaer's managed at this club, they have lost. That's not fantasy analysis, that's fact. And here's another one tonight against a side that they should have been smothering, they should have been peppering that goal, and Villarreal should have been on their feet at the end because United should have torn them apart with the difference in squad and the difference in budget, but they didn't. They didn't, and that's down to two things. Maybe a bit of arrogance from one or two players, who knows? Certainly bad performances, but it's down to the fact they do not have a manager who's going to cut the mustard for this football club going forward. And I'm fed up telling people that, But I'm telling you, until I go to my grave, I'm right about this one.
What about those who would say this is always going to be a tough task for United once Harry Maguire?
No, not like Harry Maguire. Wait, the club captain for Villarreal was on the bench. You got Foyt playing at right back with the headband, and Tottenham let him go. You know what I mean? And before we go back to this, this is a smokescreen. This second in the Premier League is a smokescreen. Let me tell you, everybody else has imploded this year apart from Man City. The 74, and you know I love my points. The 74 points that United have accrued this season under Solskjaer in the previous four seasons would have got them third, fifth and sixth, right? So stop telling me there's progress at this club, right? It's one step forward and two step back. They won't change the manager because they haven't got the stomach to do it. They won't change it because they haven't got the drive to do it or the willpower at boardroom level. They're fantasy people. They just want to make money. They try and hoodwink the fans. But they need to get, if they want to challenge, if they want to get into the real game with City and Liverpool, and I've always said that Liverpool will be back, Chelsea will be strong. If they want to get in the real game with Bayern Munich as well at European level and Real Madrid and Barca, they're going to have to hire themselves a proper manager, right? Otherwise, we're just going to dine out in these conversations for weeks and weeks and months, and it'll be the same old, same old. Decent now and again, but not good enough.
Ali, from a Villarreal perspective, and in particular a Unai Emery perspective, who became almost a cartoon character for some in the media with his time at Arsenal and his struggle maybe to grasp the English language. It's kind of like, hey, I've got four Europa Leagues.
Yeah, and it's a guy that I think understands very well what he is and is proud of the things that he has achieved, but knows very well that he has worked to achieve those things. And I think the concept of team is very clear for Unai Emery. And let's go back to the semifinals of the Europa League where he takes out Arsenal. And that must have been incredibly sweet for him. But he also knew that he was going to come into this final as an underdog. And rightfully so, because we have mentioned it time and time again that the talent personnel available to Manchester United is superior to that of Villarreal. Now, that didn't mean that they could not win this game. They were going to need some help from Manchester United. And they got that because Manchester United were poor and passive on the day. But then Villarreal had to do their job, and Unai Emery had to do his job. What I really liked about Villarreal today is that there were times in which they recognized, you know, it's not that we're just going to sit back. Yeah, sure, that's where we're going to feel most comfortable. But there's going to be times in which we can go and force the hand of Manchester United. And if there is an opportunity on a set piece, if there's an opportunity to get forward, we're going to try and do that as well, just to keep Manchester United honest, even though they didn't need to do that because Manchester United themselves were playing with a parking brake on. I just think that Unai Emery was excellent, but we knew this was going to happen. History tells us this. A man who has won this competition three times knows exactly what the role of his team and his role is coming into a final like this, and we saw that happen once again.
Frank, as a man who used to take penalties, of course, for Chelsea and Marseille, how good were those penalties in the shootout, given the pressure?
Absolutely fantastic. I was expecting, you know, after the maybe the sixth or the seventh shooter, that somebody is going to shake and do something bad. I think only Shaw had a very bad penalty and should have been out of the penalty competition, well, of the European League. After his show, because Rulli should have taken that shot. But otherwise, especially coming from Villarreal, they were masterpieces in a way. You know, so much confidence, so much calm, knowing exactly where they had to put the ball. That was very impressive. I was very impressed, you know, especially when came the ninth and the tenth. And, well, they keep on doing that. They have no doubts. But it had to be De Gea to miss the penalty. But you cannot blame anybody at that stage because it's a complete lottery.
But you know, when it got to that stage of 6-5 and 6-7, when it's now sudden death, that the guys that weren't on the initial list, you know, they're watching their teammates put the penalty in and they're applauding and they're all like hugging each other. But you know, he's thinking when the Man United player goes up, please miss, please miss, because I've got to go up. And it is it's nerve-wracking. The fans were back, some fans were back in, so that was nice. I applaud all the players that Frank's right, Shaw's wasn't the best, but he kept it low enough. But some of them that come up, it was, I mean, it was like, this is a practice match. That's yes. how nonchalant they were. And it was like, you know, Europa League final. And the goalkeeper, the Villarreal goalkeeper, arguably took the best penalty of the lot. He just come up and put his laces through it. He yeah. thought, sod this. And then the opposite was De Gea. Who
yeah,
tried
De Gea surely should have just whacked it, no?
He tried to side-foot it. So the goalkeeper has tried to outfox the other goalkeeper. He thought, right, he's going to dive to his right, so I'm going to side-foot yeah. it. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. He probably should have put his laces through it. But interesting, we see what the fallout now is at Old Trafford. What we've seen this year as the season gone on is, yes, a club that has finished second, but a club whose fans have demonstrated against the ownership. An ownership who have put out some weak messages to the fans to try and appease, which I don't think has washed. And now we have certain people starting to question within the British media, now starting to ask more of Solskjaer. Obviously, certain individuals are sort of not going to do that. They're going to try and protect him. But there is, and I've noticed already, certain parts of the media around Manchester already saying, well, he got that wrong, he got this wrong again. How long can this happen?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what the fallout is going to be in terms of, you know, if Man United are the team that's going to go out and spend big, you know, on a Kane or a Haaland or whoever it may be, is this the guy?
Yeah.
Is this the guy?
And is he the guy that's going to get them there?
And as you said, and you pointed this out to me, that, you know, when Ferguson and Guardiola and Klopp are knocking on your door, you sit up and you go, oh my God, we're going to play for them. Ferguson, going to play for him. All these managers, Zidane at Milan, at Madrid. Solskjaer? Don't think so.
Frank?
Jess, I'm sorry, but I just want to go back to the penalty shooters. And I was told that De Gea had a kind of a paper in his towel, supposedly knowing where all the shooters were putting their ball in the former penalty that they took. Well, yeah. I don't know who gave him the information, but that's the first guy who should be sacked because he was wrong all the way.
Apparently, De Gea has faced 35 penalties in a row now and hasn't saved one of them. That's a Shaka Hislop-esque record. Wow.
Well, actually, it's funny you should say that, but I saw one or two people that said, you know, that Solskjaer, one, must know this, right? And if he doesn't, then he should. And two, that there was an argument for him to do what Van Gaal did for Holland in the World Cup and was replace the goalkeeper. Do you remember this? For penalty kicks?
Yes.
For Holland.
Yeah.
And there was an argument that, you know, keeping one of his... I don't know, I can't remember how many...
It was cruel for Cillessen.
Yeah. And that worked.
Yeah.
Now, if a goalkeeper hasn't saved... It's a bit like the World Cup for England in the 1990 shootout against West Germany. Peter Shilton never got near any of those penalties. No. But yet Dave Bessett was on the bench, my old teammate at Chelsea. And Dave's 6'4". He's just a big presence. Now, that's micro analysis there. But we've seen Van Gaal do it. We've seen others do it. And as you said, he hasn't saved his last 35 penalties.
Yeah.
So maybe it was worth the gamble.
And we've bashed La Liga a lot this season, rightly so, because of some of the standards, some of the games in which they haven't turned up in Europe. But Villarreal, in the end, beating a big Premier League side, Ali.
A little bit of context about Villarreal, just so that we add a little bit of information as to where this team has come from in order to win this final. Less than a decade ago, less than 10 years ago, Villarreal was playing in the second division in Spain. Yeah. That's right. They had been relegated. They made their way back to La Liga, and since then they have been the ultimate Europa League team / mid-table team, just kind of trying to find their way, doing just enough to climb into Europe and then bowing out of the competition early on. And yet this year was different. And you would have thought that if there was ever a year in which an English team would destroy a Spanish team in a European competition, would be this year. Because, well documented, La Liga has had their difficulties. Craig just alluded to it, but the difficulties have been very clear, very flagrant. We have all seen it, that these teams have struggled to compete physically, have struggled to compete with the pace of the game, to keep up with the energy and the speed of play. And yet today, Villarreal managed to do the opposite. They slowed it down, and Manchester United didn't know what to do. It almost felt like they were surprised that, oh, wait a minute, Villarreal is going to slow this down? They're going to put numbers behind the ball? They're going to crowd our playmaking players? They're going to get numbers around Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba? What are we going to supposed to do? We didn't know that this was going to happen. Everybody else knew, but we didn't. And the lack of adjustments from Manchester United allowed Villarreal today to play in the manner in which they wanted to. Well-deserved win for Villarreal.
Let me tell you the difference in desire and ambition. And there was different stories behind it. But Chelsea, under Sarri, got into the top four. He went to the Champions League, Europa League final in whatever it was, Ukraine or Kiev or wherever, I can't remember, and demolished Arsenal 4-1. And he knew it was coming, but he was relieved of his duties because the ownership wasn't happy. They went down a Frank Lampard route, bit of appeasement, see how it works, transfer ban, not happy, bosh, done. Right or wrong? Out. Tuchel comes in, FA Cup final, albeit they lost, top four, Champions League final. Right? They're in Chelsea in the Champions League final. Whether they win or lose, it doesn't matter. They're in the Champions League final. Man United can't even get a sniff of that at the moment. Right? These other clubs are making decisions, key decisions, not always popular decisions, but key decisions that ownership think has to be made. Got to sacrifice him to move in a different direction. This is not acceptable to our football club. Yeah, Europa League, great. Chelsea 4, Arsenal 1, bang. But really, am I the owner of Chelsea Football Club to be winning Europa League? Or am I the manager of this club to be challenging at the top of the Premier League, to be winning the Premier League, and to be in Champions League finals and be with the elite level clubs in Europe? That's how a lot of the ownership of some of these other clubs see themselves. But apparently at Man United, up until this point, they just see themselves as an outfit going along, trying to appease the fans as best we can, spend a bit of money. Solskjaer keeps the dressing room happy. We can control him somewhat. He's not a loose cannon. He's not a Mourinho. Mm. He's not going to talk against us. He'll do his press conferences. It's going to be clean. We're all happy. If that's your game, keep your manager. If you want to be in with the best, you're going to have to make changes.
I'm sure a lot more on this game on Extra Time. As always, you can check that out over on our YouTube channel.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Zinedine Zidane, reports say, will leave Real Madrid with immediate effect. It's an extraordinary resume for someone who hadn't coached at the top level before, of course, just falling short of winning La Liga this year. Frank is still with us. Welcome in as well. Gab Marcotti and Alessandro Del Piero. Ali, of course, people are saying, well, Zidane is inevitably now going to take over at Juventus.
Well, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in Italy because actually at the moment, 11 benches in Italy from Serie A, from latest Serie A, is gone already. So I don't know how it's called this moment, you know, everybody's changed bench and Zidane is, of course, a big guy in the market. Everybody would love to see him in Italy, especially Juve fans, but Juve's situation it's not great, honestly.
No, it's an interesting situation, Gab, because obviously you've got Zinedine Zidane linked to Juventus and also Allegri as well.
Yeah, and you also don't have a director of football because Fabio Baratici, his contract at Juve wasn't renewed. You've had the club giving out assurances that Pirlo was going to stay if he finished top four. So it's very much a situation in flux, and I think there's going to be some big decisions coming up towards the end of the month with the club's shareholders, vis-a-vis the president, Andrea Agnelli, and on what direction this club is going to go in. So everything is very, very fluid.
It certainly is, Frank. And you take a look at Zizou and everything he's achieved at Real Madrid. Natural step for him, obviously, with the success that he had at Juventus, is that move to Turin. Do you think now is the right time to do that?
It is. It is, because the bench is vacant, and you can expect him to go back to a team that he played for and very well played for and won many titles with. So it would be normal to see him coming. But there is a competition for that, and we see what's going on. You know, I'm sad to see him leaving the Real Madrid bench, but it's a life of a coach when you don't have the result that the maybe the chairman or the shareholders are expecting. But definitely, if you see Zidane in another club, it will come directly to Juventus or maybe the French national team. But because Deschamps is very well seated in the French national team bench, I think you naturally see him going to Juventus.
Ali, do you think that Zidane gets the credit that he deserves? Because some just say he's a good man manager, a good cheerleader, but not a top coach.
Are you kidding me? I mean, winning three Champions League is not something that you read in the book. It doesn't matter how you achieve the competition that you won. I mean, I'm talking about the Champions League, because Champions League is the most important trophy that, you know, a team like Real Madrid can win, and bringing three in a row, and it's a big achievement. It's nothing. Nobody did that before, and it's a unique situation. Probably is better fit. Until now, we know that with Real Madrid is a perfect situation for him. Not, of course, today, but till yesterday, let's say like this. But when you win that much and that high level, it's you deserve it. You deserve all the credit to do what you want, honestly. Maybe it doesn't work in the next team because, you know, every club is different, every country is different, and the football is different playing in different countries. But, come on, you can do everything.
And if we were to speak to Juventus fans and give the option between Allegri or Zidane, which one do you think they would go for?
Well, it's that is a big question, because when Allegri came in, most of the fans were very suspicious about his way to do things, his past. Most of the fans regret the fact that he's gone in the last 2 years. So they love the things that he did in this on the club. With Zizou, is a kind of, you know, a love affair, let's say like this, you know, something that, you know, brings back in memories, and of course the titles that he reached and the glamour that he reached with Real Madrid is a new one. And every new situation is definitely more attractive than bringing back somebody that already did something with the club. So, but it's an unfair competition. It's 50-50. It's like the penalties that we see on the final, you know?
Meanwhile, Gab, Antonio Conte gone at Inter. This is something that we talked about in the week leading up to this decision. For those who haven't been particularly following this story, he's just won the title. Why is he out?
He's out because Inter are a club that have lost enormous amounts of money in recent years. Their majority shareholders, suing the Chinese conglomerate. They've taken big, big hits back home in China, and they said they're going to focus on their core business. They're part owned by the Chinese government at this stage. And basically, the club went to him and said, look, well, you know, the next transfer window, it's not going to be about what your transfer, you know, your net spend budget is. It's going to be about how much money we can get back. We hope to, you know, get back between 80 and 100 million euros. And on top of that, we're going to have to cut the wage bill 15 to 20%. And that was basically the opposite idea of what Conte wanted. Conte wanted money and investment to go and have a run and try to win the Champions League. And so ultimately they reached this deal. He had 1 year left on his contract. He earned about $24 million, $25 million a year. Essentially, they're going to pay him half what they would have paid him in the final year of his contract. I think in exchange, he's made a pledge not to take over at another Serie A club. And he's going to walk away. And now they need to figure out who their new manager is.
Ali, this is pretty crazy, yeah?
It is. As I mentioned before, you know, already 11 clubs in Italy changed the previous Serie A that just finished, changed the coaches. And this is never happened before. And probably two, three more will change before end of the week, maybe. So, and it happened only once when Juve sacked Allegri, and that club that won the Serie A title changed the coach. It's a very unique situation. But we are facing a very unique situation because of what happened the past years, including the pandemic and the crisis that involved all the soccer world, let's say like this. So as Gab say, you know, the economic side of the deal is very, very important for everybody. And the ambitions of Conte are pretty high. And they're going two different ways. And it's, I don't know, it's a telenovela. We can call it a telenovela because, you know, a guy from Verona go to Torino. And then from the team that won the league disappear. And then we just got the news that Inzaghi renew. It happened a few minutes ago. Inzaghi renew with Lazio, so it's at least a good sign that some clubs stay with the same way, including Milan and Atalanta, of course. But the other one, for example, the first five clubs that we have finished in the top five in Italy, most of 50%, three of them, changed the coach.
So inevitably, Ali, rumours will start circulating about Conte's next role, and they'll think, oh, there's a vacancy at Real Madrid. You know him well, you've played with him, obviously. How would he deal with that situation? Obviously, Real Madrid, quite a unique club and the control that others have around him.
Well, I think in the history of Real Madrid, it happened something similar when they choose Capello, another tough guy, you know, with strength and a strong way to do things. Real Madrid is a club, is an amazing club, and You need to be a little bit collective, you know, a little bit creative in managing things because you are at the top of the world and the top three best team in the world in terms of what happened not only inside the pitch but also outside the pitch for the number of training and it's very unique. When I was speaking a couple of years ago with Zizou, and he told me, listen, you don't leave. I mean. You don't have so much life beside of the work. You need to be commitment 100%, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And this is the kind of level that every coach need to approach now in order to be really focused on what they want to do and manage the teams. But in the meantime, especially it works much more when you train and when you coach clubs that have a really, really high interesting also outside the pitch.
Meanwhile, away from the managerial merry-go-round, we're seeing a bit of a goalkeeping merry-go-round as well, Ali. Donnarumma, it's reported, will not be at Milan next season. His contract, of course, runs out this summer. People linking him to a move to Juventus.
Yeah, this is the plan. Milan play really, really strong now after chasing him three times to... in order to have him, you know, in a better situation as a contract for Milan and also for him. They tried really hard to get him to the club, but, you know, Donnarumma refused to do that. And then all of a sudden Milan said, you know what, okay, thank you very much. We're going to lose you for zero. And then we move forward. And they choose the Lille goalkeeper to replace him. Mm. And everyone say that should be join Juve really, really soon.
Is that a move that you would like to see?
You know, traditionally, yes. Traditionally, all the time, and most of the time, Juventus goalkeeper is also a national goalkeeper. So, is a perfect match for what happened in the history with Buffon, with Peruzzi before, with Tacconi even before. You know, amazing, a great goalkeeper, best in the world. That this is the potential of Donnarumma, that he show, not every game, but some games he show amazing potential. You know, in Italy we know, and also in Europe, in all the football world, we know that he has incredible strength and good presence. And in order to be really, really young like he is, you know, it's very great experience, the number of games that he has in his leg and his mind. So that is a great opportunity for everyone, to be honest. And the potential are amazing, huge. He need to show a consistency in what he's doing. And probably with another team can happen. I don't know, but potential are there for sure.
Gab, I imagine this is a move that Milan fans would welcome. No problem, him going to Juve.
Honestly, the reaction from Milan fans is many of them have basically been said good riddance. And you know what? I'm not convinced. Everybody's taking it for granted that he's going to Juventus. All we know for certain is that Milan have said, that's your contract offer. We're not going to go any higher. We're not going to be pushed around by Mino Raiola. We're not going to be pushed around by your threats. And in the meantime, as Ale said, you know, they've secured the Lille goalkeeper, Mike Maignan, who's, you know, 25 years old, highly, highly rated. But I wouldn't take it for granted now that he's going to Juventus, because for the simple reason that Juventus are in a very difficult situation financially. Juventus don't have a new manager. Juventus already have a very good, very highly paid goalkeeper in Wojciech Szczęsny, who, you know, I think would be tough to shift, not because he's not a great goalkeeper, but because the clubs that can afford Szczęsny, most of them already have very good keepers of their own. So I think it's going to be interesting how this pans out. It almost looks to me like, you know, Milan are saying to Raiola, to Donnarumma, you know what, we're going to call your bluff. If you really think you can, you know, you can get the same money that you wanted from us, if you think you really think you can go and get it from Juventus, and, you know, we are talking north of $20 million a year, about $22, $23 million, plus a huge commission for Mino Raiola, you think you can get it from them, good luck. So I don't quite think that this is done yet.
Well, we're certainly following it closely over the summer. Meanwhile, finally, Ali, this is the last time that you're on before the Champions League final between Manchester City and Chelsea. Manchester City favourites going into that final in Portugal this weekend. What's your prediction?
Well, I think Man City can finish the job. An incredible season. So I 51% for Man City. But it's very tiny situation because Chelsea show incredible strength that probably nobody can see that much. And so they not only deserve to be in the final, but they have a big chance.
49% chance compared to 51%, yes? That is where we're going. we'll be looking ahead, and thank you very much, guys, in more detail to the Champions League final on the next edition of the show. Be sure to join us.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
So with the Europa League out the way, we can now fully focus on the Champions League final this weekend. Manchester City taking on Chelsea. They've already faced off three times this season. Manchester City winning their first game, but that was with Frank Lampard in charge. Since Tommy Tuchel took over, it's two games and two wins for Chelsea. Well, in Porto, ahead of the game for us is Gemma Soler. Gemma, I want to focus on the fact that normally Champions League week in these cities, the atmosphere is fantastic. Everywhere you look, there's a reminder that there is a big game around the corner. I imagine slightly different in Porto this year.
Hello, then. Boa tarde. Yes, it's slightly different, but it's better than what we had last year in Lisbon with absolutely no public, any supporter in the stands. We will be having about 18,000 fans, 6,000 of each team, Man City and Chelsea. So it will be something similar to a final, the 33%. Of the capacity. They are not here yet, most of the supporters. This is because they need a PCR 72 hours ahead of the game. So they will be landing in Portugal around Friday, Saturday to enjoy this game. But the city is ready. The city has this giant sculpture of the Champions League trophy and lots of pictures of the champions. The stadium, we've been there this afternoon and is ready. Everything is settled to have this final. We need to take into account as well that it's been a last-minute decision. This final, it has to be played in Turkey, and 3 weeks ago, they decided to move it here.
Now, of course, the reason Portugal has been chosen in particular is it is one of the green lights countries that the UK has named over the last few weeks. So I'm wondering, are we going to see a lot of fans maybe who don't have tickets come over, or is there a protocol in place to make sure that this doesn't happen?
No, I don't think so. And I tell you why. Manchester City, they had 6,000 tickets. They sold them all, but this has a reason. It's because the owner of Man City decided to pay the flight and the hotel for the fans who buy the ticket. Chelsea has returned 800 of these 6,000 tickets because for some fans it's too expensive to buy the flight. The hotels here, it's not a big city, are really expensive. And plus, you have to do at least and maybe two PCRs, which is about $100. So I don't think we will be having a lot of English tourists coming here without a ticket, because there will be no fan fest, there will be no big screen to follow the game. So maybe some Englishmen, some supporters who live in Portugal will drive here, but we will not be seeing that picture we see in all the finals of thousands and thousands of supporters with no ticket, but coming to Porto to support their teams.
Gemma, it's the first time we've had you on since the Spanish national team was announced. I just wanted to get your opinion on it. Of course, a lot of surprises, in particular, no Sergio Ramos. In fact, no Real Madrid players at all in the 23-man squad that Luis Enrique announced. I was just wondering, how was that received in Spain?
Well, all the headlines were about Ramos. Mm. I think it's quite logical because he hasn't been fit. He hasn't been playing well in his team. Real Madrid hasn't been able to win anything. So I think it's a little bit of logic that one of the biggest teams doesn't have any player. As Luis Enrique coach said, it's circumstantial. It's because if Ramos was fit, he will be there. If Nacho was fit, he will be there for sure. There's something curious is that the team who brings more players is precisely Manchester City. So it's strange that I think it reflects that nowadays the Spanish giants are not in their best moment in history, Barcelona and Real Madrid.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Manchester City. One player in particular, of course, for the first time being called up is Laporte, because before that he was for the French national team. They've turned their back on him. He is obviously now dedicating himself to Spain. How has that been received?
Well, it's been received good because Spanish supporters know that they had a problem in the back line, in the defendants, with Sergio Ramos not being fit, with problems with other defendants, with Gerard Piqué, who left the national team a couple of years ago. So it's all right. There's not like hard feelings like, okay, he played with France. No, it's nothing like that. It's a player which is important. And also coach Luis Enrique said that probably even if Sergio Ramos was fit, he would probably call him. There was negotiations like during more than a year for this to happen.
Gemma Soler, thank you very much. Great to hear from you. Enjoy the Champions League final. And of course, a lot of build up to that final in Porto over on our YouTube channel. Go there. Don't forget to subscribe to ESPN FC. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Stubborn, deluded, however you want to explain it. This was what Barcelona, Juventus and Real Madrid put out on Wednesday. FC Barcelona, Juventus and Real Madrid wish to express their absolute rejection of the insistent coercion that UEFA has been maintaining towards three of the most relevant institutions in the history of football. The opening of disciplinary proceedings by UEFA is incomprehensible and is a direct attack against the rule of law. The Super League has been promoted with the aim of improving the situation of European football through permanent dialogue with UEFA and with the objective to increase the interest in the sport and to offer fans the best possible show. UEFA expects us to withdraw the ongoing court proceedings that question their monopoly. Either we reform football or we will have to watch its inevitable downfall. Gab, they're not giving up without a fight.
No, they're not. And it's really hard to kind of see what the end game is. I mean, to be fair to those three clubs, you know, at this point, UEFA have started disciplinary proceedings against them. They have to defend themselves. One of the ways they're defending themselves is this lawsuit that they'd filed around the same time that the Super League launched, which basically they believe they have an injunction from the court in Madrid against any kind of punitive action until the lawsuit is resolved. The lawsuit basically alleges that UEFA is engaging in monopolistic behavior because they're one's competition organizer and regulator. So, you know, from their perspective, in for a dime, you know, in for a dollar at this stage, and they figure it's the best way to fight back. Certainly, in terms of PR, and maybe it doesn't really matter here. Maybe it's all down to the courts, not in terms of PR. I don't think they're helping themselves when, you know, they say something, you know, you saw that, what was it, like inevitable downfall of the game and whatever else. Now, I think the attitude of a lot of people is, well, may lead to your downfall because of your debt and your overspending, but not necessarily everybody else. So UEFA is going to push on. But that said, they're pretty confident that, you know, UEFA won't be able to enforce the disciplinary case against them. And that all of this is just muscle flexing and stuff that UEFA is doing for show.
But how can they continue to push when nobody else wants to play with them, Gab?
So I think at this stage, the goalposts have moved a little bit. They're not pushing in the sense that, oh, hey, you know, those nine clubs who left, you guys all come back. I think, A, like I said, they're not pushing. A, they would say that they're defending themselves from the disciplinary action. You recall the other nine clubs kind of agreed a plea bargain with UEFA where they took some punishment, some fines. But these three clubs haven't. And so they presumably, UEFA have, you know, sterner punishment lined up for them. So they want to defend themselves from that by reminding them that they have this injunction. And long term, they want this lawsuit to go ahead because they think if it goes ahead and they get a favorable judgment, then, you know, UEFA will have to come and negotiate on their terms because UEFA will be seen as a monopolist. It's going to have to do something else, like maybe stop organizing European competitions and let the clubs do it themselves or whatnot. And I think they're also pretty confident that at that stage, the nine clubs who left them will come back.
Gab, you talk about sterner punishment. Could any of these three teams, or indeed all of them, be suspended from the Champions League, for example, next season?
Oh, no question. I mean, that's in the rules. That is the maximum punishment. It would be a 2-year ban for violating Article 51, which expressly says that you can't go and form other leagues without the sanctioning body's consent. Now, they say, well, when we formed the Super League, remember, you know, we also asked you for permission to be the Super League. We wanted you, UEFA, to go and be a part of it and supply us with five teams to pad out the numbers and whatever else. So they're pretty confident it won't come to that. But certainly in theory, the maximum punishment for this kind of violation is a two-year ban.
Gab Marcotti, thank you very much. Just a reminder, a lot more from Gab on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. Lots of them to talk about in the latest edition, which drops on Thursday.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Kathleen McNamee and Tor Christian Carlsen have worked together to bring you the top 21, 21 and under women players around the world. For a lot more on that, you can check out Football Americas. That drops tomorrow. Let's take a show into the first leg of the German promotion playoffs. Of course, it's the team that finished 16th in the Bundesliga, Cologne, taking on Holstein Kiel, who finished third in the second division. Just the one goal in this game, and it's the substitute, Renz, who makes it 1-0 to Holstein Kiel.
Yep, and he did what you had to do. He went and attacked it, and he got his just rewards.
Wow, so they very much have the advantage going into the second leg in a match that you can see live on Saturday, 12 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. Before that, it's the Championship final. A place in the Premier League at stake. Brentford taking on Swansea City. That game kicks off at 10. Coverage starts, though, at 9:15 Eastern here on Plus. That's it then. That brings us to the end of what a busy old show. Crikey. Be sure to stay tuned though. Extra time is next. Frank back with me. Craig
World
as well.
Cup, Frank.
There is a lot of talk about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Yeah. Not much of it. Complimentary. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Craig with me in the studio. Frank Leboeuf joins us as well. One topic just dominates everything, and that is the Europa League final.
Do we have to do the questions, or should we tell people why we were kind of laughing when we came on?
Well, what's interesting is the fact that Solskjaer brought up that he had no pre-season.
We were reading quotes
post-match.
We were reading an email that was quotes from Solskjaer's press conferences, and they were hilariously funny.
It seems a strange time to bring that up when your team.
We got to a final.
Yeah.
And he said 2 months ago, winning trophies was an ego trip. And then the best one was a pre-season.
Yeah.
We had no pre-season. My God, we're nearly at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And that was because you didn't get a pre-season. How long ago is that now? 10 months? 9 months?
And I think the problem is that, you know, it was Villarreal today, you know? You look at their team and you look, like, how many Villarreal players get into the Manchester United side on paper? We know it's not played on paper. But overall, Frank, a good day for Villarreal. Should De Gea really be blamed for this loss, even though Manchester United were absolutely poor?
Of course not. Of course not. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer should have looked on the De Gea records about saving penalties, which I think is nothing in 35 penalties against him.
Yeah, 36.
So
now,
maybe
apparently.
He should have 36. Yeah. So maybe he should have gotten the substitute just for the penalty shoot. It happened once.
Yeah.
For maybe the Netherlands.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
Cillessen.
But yeah.
Yeah.
So because De Gea is maybe a good goalkeeper, but he's not good enough for penalties. That's for sure. But he cannot be blamed because we all know that it's a lottery and there is no big chances for goalkeeper to save penalties.
Here's another quote. Sorry, I'm on the quote trail.
Okay,
here.
Go on.
Here's another one about now is not the time to point the finger at what I may have done differently. All right, no worries. Give you 6 months. 6 months, 2 months, 4 months? Or should we just not point the finger at all at team selection, at substitutions?
He seemed to sit on his hands quite a lot. Like, he didn't obviously didn't make to the substitutions.
Well, he got up and applauded a couple of times.
No, but you know what I mean. He didn't make the change. Unai Emery was quite proactive in his changes. You feel at Solskjaer.
Yeah. Well, Rashford was certainly one that could have got hold of and probably shouldn't have started.
Away from Solskjaer, Craig, those who don't believe that Bruno Fernandes is a world-class player may turn up and say that this isn't it, isn't the kind of game where he should have grabbed the game by the scruff of its neck. Would it be a fair argument?
I have not liked... I mean, there's a lot of people out there talking about the amount of penalties that Fernandes has scored, and that is true. He's done some excellent things at Man United, but I have got increasingly annoyed watching him, watching his antics about, and he was doing it again tonight in this game, complaining to the referee when it wasn't even him directly involved. It was another player making a challenge, and the Villarreal player was late on, say, a Pogba, somebody else, and he's over there complaining. He spends his whole time complaining now. That's what it seems. And whenever he's challenged, it's been noticeable that he doesn't like it, but yet all the great players that have played around Europe, and particularly for that club, they've had to overcome that, whether it's been a Cantona or a Van Nistelrooy or a Cole or a York or whoever, Ryan Giggs. These players got kicked around the pitch because they were targeted. They were targeted because they were excellent players. So he's been targeted. And a lot of the times he hasn't been able to handle that. It's all right producing great goals and great bits against Crystal Palace and Southampton and Burnley and Newcastle and Fulham. But he's yet to show for this club, along with others, that he can really do it at the top level on a consistent basis.
Do you agree, Frank?
I totally agree. It's true, and I will go on the all explanation that Craig just gave, that he annoyed me at a certain point, you know, always complaining to referees like he did today, always trying to be the, you know, kind of trying to find a justice, being the sheriff on the field. And he annoyed me. And on top of it, excellent player, but not there when you really need him in big games. And today was a big game and we barely saw him.
United have made progress under Ole in his time and done decently in the league, but does the loss tonight show that Ole just isn't good enough, Frank? With Conte and Zidane available now as well as Allegri, should United go for one of them?
Yes, well, according to what Craig thinks about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, there is a big chance that Ole Gunnar should go.
What about you, Frank?
They tried with him. At the end of the day, they didn't win anything. So I think it's time for Manchester United to change and to go for somebody more experienced. But does it mean that Zidane is experienced? He only coached Real Madrid and did very well. But will he fit to Manchester United? Not speaking English, not knowing the Premier League. It's the same for Allegri. I don't know. We have so many question marks that I can answer, but I think it's a time for Manchester United to make a change.
Frank,
I can't quite get my head around the first line here, and I hear it a lot. United have made progress under Solskjaer. What's defining progress here? A few extra points than last year? A Europa League final? Mourinho won it. And got 81 points in the league and won the EFL Cup. These are not great competitions, but he won those competitions. He's failed to win anything. So I'm really struggling with those people that come out and say Solskjaer has made progress. Made progress where they've signed some better attacking players that's given them better attacking options, but yet are they that much better? I don't think so. And I don't really see an identity of his management style. So I struggle. Listen, if progress is a happier camp, then yes, they've made progress. Come in the morning, everybody, a cup of tea, yeah. Happy days, isn't this lovely dressing room? Everybody's happy, nobody's complaining. We've made progress. I'll give you that. Somebody has to really tell me where the real progress is in the field. I mean, you talk about progress, you look at Liverpool and City. And that, they're the benchmarks, whether people like it or not in England. They're the benchmarks. You look at real progress when Liverpool were trying to turn it around, hadn't won the league for 30 years, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
The progress was pushing City to win the league with 100 points.
Yeah.
Or thereabouts. And then when they did win it, they were almost at 100 points themselves. That's progress. Progress isn't just not a couple of points here and there. That was real progress, coming in and pushing arguably the best team in Europe all the way down to the last, almost the last kick of the ball. And then the next season, beating them. That's proper progress. Not a few extra points and a happy dressing room. These Man United fans
Frank,
are deluded with this Ollie scenario. Go on, Frank.
I think we can't really make
lights
a statement.
Off.
We can't really make a statement about
lights off.
About what we think and if there is a.
Sorry.
We can't really make a statement about what we think and about any clubs if they made progress comparing to former seasons, because it was a very strange season with the pandemic and everything. We saw that all big clubs were not as good as they were before. City, Liverpool, Bayern Munich, Juventus, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Paris Saint-Germain, they all dropped dramatically. And so, therefore, you cannot make a statement. You cannot say that Manchester United is better. You cannot even make, because people are going to say we don't like Manchester United. I can't even say if I can make a statement about Chelsea, because I don't know.
Right.
We're going to see next season, in front of all the stands, the attendance, it changed something with the preseason and everything. If clubs are where they are, or maybe they don't deserve where they are, or maybe they don't deserve to be that low, I think we go back to City, Liverpool, and we'll see for the others.
Right.
We'll go back to Barcelona, Real Madrid. We'll go back to Bayern Munich, and we'll go back to Juventus and Paris Saint-Germain. I think that's what I think. I think that season is a nonsense season, so we cannot make a statement.
How up to date are you on celebrity marbles? Did you follow this story?
The last time I was with Frankie, he was just about to pop off to Amsterdam for a little bit of the old marbles.
How was it, Frank?
That was very interesting.
Yes.
Is there a video?
In fact,
we had some games. I can't really explain because I can't say the result, because it's going to be next summer in France, and we were working for
no
our
spoilers.
Charity. And it was really nice. Not very interesting, but it was very nice. It was a nice game, and I did it for a charity, so you cannot complain and criticise me for that.
Oh, well, we probably can.
And it can't be revealed until next summer.
Yeah, what will happen first, Craig? Ollie winning a trophy or you playing celebrity marbles on TV? You'd do it for a fee.
There's
wouldn't
a
you?
Fair chance it's going to be me playing marbles.
Yep, I think so. What were celebrations like after one of your teams won a major tournament? So what was it like once Celtic won and stopped the 10 in a row?
Magnificent.
What were the celebrations?
It was only slightly up from our normal celebrations on a Tuesday night and a Saturday night.
Was it just a massive bender?
I don't know. I can't remember.
Well, yes, then I imagine.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was like, it's a bit hazy.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff on the pitch, 60,000 there and families. And
was it happiness or relief more?
Oh, both. Relief when that referee blew the whistle, because there was people don't realise, I mean, it's changed now, but the Scottish football back then was a really good standard, and Rangers had a really good team. Some of the best players around Europe, and we signed some good players, particularly Henrik Larsson and others, and we had a good side. But the pressure to win that year is arguably the most pressure that Celtic have been under since they lifted the European Cup in 67.
Right.
When they beat Inter Milan. That's how important that season was. So, yeah, it was a relief, because until we got the second goal in the final game, we knew Rangers were winning at Tannadice, and then we were winning 1-0 at home to St Johnstone, until the Norwegian striker came off the bench, Harald Brattbakk, and got the second goal, it was, the whole place was just a nervous wreck. You could feel it.
Yeah.
Because every time the ball went in the box from St Johnston, really, it was a bit like the Villarreal game, where they didn't have that much, but every now and again they would go forward, set piece, whatever, and one would flash over the bar and you were like, oh no, if this goes in, we're dead. So happiness, relief, big party, great achievement with your teammates. That's how these Villarreal boys will look back,
yeah, I bet,
and say, look, him and him and him, years down the line. Frankie knows, yeah, when he was at Chelsea, particularly after I left, you know, the FA Cup final, the Cup Winners' Cup, all his teammates, France with the World Cup, all his teammates, when you meet up years later, when you've got no hair like Frank or grey hair like me.
All your hair's going as well.
All right. I'm hanging on. Then you, but you do, you sort of, you see these guys and you say, yeah, sometimes you can get a bit nostalgic.
I bet.
It's
Frank,
nice.
You think of World Cup, European Championship, FA Cups as well. What was the best night, the best celebration out of all of those?
Well, I have to, of course, name the first FA Cup that we won, because Chelsea didn't win anything, and we partied for like an hour or more than an hour at Wembley after the celebration, after the lifting the cup. And it was absolutely fantastic. And after we went to an hotel and partied, and Pelé was there. Oh. And that was absolutely fantastic. And as Craig said, you know, every time that I talk about that, you know, I've got something coming up into my body, and I feel something because I remember something absolutely special. And every time I meet up with some former teammates, there is a, I don't know, something that I would call respect, you know, between each other.
Yeah.
Respect.
It's unique as well. Only
maybe
you know
the
what
best
you
friends. Yeah, exactly. But I have to say that the World Cup, I mean, the day after the World Cup, when we went into the Champs-Élysées, and you find more than a million people in the Champs-Élysées, you realize that you've done something incredible for your country.
Yeah.
And that's something very emotionally high, you know? And and like 23 years almost after, every day in France, somebody talks to me about July 12th, 1998.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Just stop going out in your kit, Frank.
Yeah. Stop going out with your name on the back of your team. So here's a story.
I promise. I won't anymore.
This is shin guards. This is typical of some of the lads who were at Celtic at the time. So it was the year after. It was the year after that we won the league and cup double, and we got to the Scottish Cup final. So it was 98-99 season, and a week before it, at Tannadice, I got stretchered off with a bad knee.
Right.
And that season I was injury plagued anyway, and I couldn't play. I wasn't fit to play in the Scottish Cup final at Hampden, so I was out. So Dick Advocaat was manager at Rangers, so the Rangers won. So that night we went out to this. We better not go into town, because it's, you know,
sure, you can't be seen.
We don't want to be rubbing, yeah, you know, the faces in it that we've lost. So we'll go to this local restaurant in the south side of Glasgow that we used to frequent, and there was about 20 of us and the wives and some friends and, you know, of all the players. And not everybody was there, but most of them. And we knew the owner of the restaurant. And come the end of the night, when most of the people were gone, I remember we were on top of the tables and the music was blaring and people were singing and we were dancing and everybody was drunk. And I remember, I'll never forget it, Tommy Johnson turned to me and he went, he used to call me Butler. He said, Butler, did we win today or did we lose? And I went, the boys went, oh, I don't know. We'll carry on anyway.
Hey, imagine if there were camera phones. You guys would be in.
Yeah.
For many other reasons as well throughout your career.
But yeah, that wouldn't have went down too well. But it, sometimes it was the old saying in the 90s, no, win or lose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Drinks and booze.
Should we continue, John, or should we say goodbye? I feel like we've done a lot of time.
One more question.
Yeah, I think we'll say goodbye.
Well, why don't you do that normally?
Sorry?
You know what I'm like with extra time? One question, done, wrap.
No, you love extra time.
I don't.
Yeah, tell your nice stories. Thank you very much.
That's the last one I'm telling.
Frank's
I don't get paid enough.
Frank's got his kit in the wash ready for tomorrow's walk around Paris.
Frank LaBoot, World Cup winner.
Sure. That's it. World Cup medal around there. We'll be back tomorrow for more to look ahead to the Champions League final.